Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Erin Bradley-Danger. I'm here with Chris Gordon on Hellblazer Biz.
Everyone, I have the honor and the privilege of the company of Erin Bradley-Danger today. So thank you for joining me, Erin.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
No, it's welcome. Yeah, I'm really, really thankful that you accepted to come on. So, yeah.
Oh my gosh. My pleasure, Chris. Thank you. This is awesome.
No, this is great. Yeah, it's great. I mean, I love doing these, and especially with Cobra Kai, it's been great because doing the show is very much in a similar way to acting, in the fact that there could be dry periods, and I'd had a dry period for 6 months. I thought the pandemic would actually help, but no, it just meant all the actors were looking to do other things, like starting their own podcasts. I was like, oh, right, okay. And then, Susan Gallagher, I think it was, through her, and then all of a sudden, you know, it just like spiraled. It's like, whoa.
Yeah. I've been seeing a lot, and I've watched several of your interviews as well. They're great. So it's a lot of fun for me to learn about what all these folks are up to as well. So it's real fun.
Brilliant. Thank you. No, you're a really great bunch. And I think that's one of, we're going to that. One of the things that makes that show particularly special is the fact that, you guys are so great with all the fans and, all the cast. You're very interactive. So.
Yeah, for sure. It's a lot of Atlanta people, which I think may make some of that difference, because we are, as a group of actors, as a community, very supportive of one another, which I've never been to LA, but I hear that it's not like that there. It's not like that in New York. So I don't know. I feel like we're all here to boost each other and, be supportive. And it creates a vibe for sure. That's really nice.
Yeah, definitely. I think Atlanta is becoming a very big focal spot as well, Atlanta. And you're right. I think everyone I speak to, you're all from Atlanta, everyone I've spoken to so far.
Yeah.
Or moved to Atlanta, should I say. So,
right. And that's not to say that I'm not trying to alienate any of the LA
cast. Oh, no, I know.
They're awesome as well.
Yeah. It's a very different lifestyle between Atlanta and LA. LA is a very, I had a guest on once actually called Manu Bennett, and the first time I had him on, he was in LA. And when I first got him, he's a brilliant guy. And the interviews, we spoke for an hour and 45 minutes, to be fair.
But
he was all dressed up. He was on his mat, making, because he said the pressure of LA. And you could see that in the way he was coming across.
Wow.
But then he thought he wanted to do it again. So we had to do the whole thing again. But that time, but the next time he was at home in New Zealand, and he was in his daughter's bedroom. And the video, there was no video because he was just in his basically shorts and t-shirt. And the difference between him when he was in LA compared to when he was at home was so vast, because in LA, he had to put on that pressure. He was so pressured in that environment.
Yeah.
It completely changed the way he came across.
Wow, that's wild.
And it's not
it's hard to relax, I think, in general. But, that's a huge difference.
It was an absolute major difference. And I couldn't believe it myself when I saw it. And I was like, wow,
That was nice of you to do it again.
I loved it. It was great. He was Crixus in Spartacus, the series, if you're watching Spartacus. And I got him to say, it's actually recorded on my show, the beginning, because one of the favourite sayings from that show, when their words of swearing for in the old Roman days, and he's like, Jupiter's cock, and he would start saying, and he used to say that, his character, and I was like, please, please, please. So he goes, look, my name is Manu Bennett, and by Jupiter's cock, I'm with Chris Gordon.
Great. I wish I'd have thought of something like that to do for mine.
It's going to be probably the best one I've done, because the phrase was brilliant. So I was like, please, please say something like that. And he was like,
That's cute.
Cool. Anyway, back to you, Erin, because this is about you.
Yes, it's all about me.
It is, yeah. I mean, you obviously are you're experienced actress and very talented actress as well. But you started out you're welcome. And you started out in musical theatre, which is what I love.
Yes, me too.
It's fantastic stuff. And I mean, I've obviously read you were in A Miracle on 34th Street.
Mm-hmm. Here's Love is the stage production of that.
Mm-hmm.
But most people have seen the movie. So yeah, the Natalie Wood's character, Susan, this was like when I was, I think in fifth grade or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and I had done school plays prior to that. And I think my first ever was in first grade was the, was called the Elephant, Elephant something or other. And I had to sing a song called the Limpopo River, which I don't remember anymore, but, but I remember loving it and going like, ooh, when did we get to do this again?
Mm-hmm.
And, but that was the Here's Love was the first major stage production. I auditioned, I got the role, months of rehearsal. It was at this place called the Fulton Opera House in my hometown of Lancaster, Pennsylvania,
okay.
Which was like this historic opera house that was built either next to or partially on top of an old prison. So it was rumored that it was haunted and it had all that good old lore that went along with it. Beautiful stage and room. And so we did maybe like a 4 week or 6 week run. It was a long run pre-Christmas. And we even did some like promotional stuff where we had to go out to hotels and sing some of the songs for these groups of people. It was crazy. But that was where it really, the bug bit me. It was so much fun. I enjoyed it. But now I don't know that I mean, aside from the pandemic causing a lot of our stages or all of our stages, I guess, basically right now to be closed, which is a real shame. It's a time thing. You know, I'm married, I have a family, and a few years back I looked into auditioning for something that was coming through here in one of our local playhouses, and I had prepared my audition, had my song ready to go, got my appointment. And when I showed up, they handed me a schedule. Mm. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is from, I think it was 6:30 or 7 p.m. until 10, at least five nights a week, sometimes six. Oh, then you have 2 weeks of tech and then the production. And my kids were little at the time. And I thought, I don't think I knew what I was getting myself into. So I politely gave my slot to another person and said, thank you very much. I'll be back when my kids are grown up. But, you know, it's a lot of fun. I love anything with music in it, really, is the connection that Excellent. Initially got me started with it.
No, that's fantastic. And, you know, you're not the first person to say that about theatre. It's the fact that everyone loves the theatre, but it's the time-consuming element of it, especially one where you've got a family and two, is I think in Atlanta as well, it's been said, I think the two Lewises, Matt and Dustin, both said that it's difficult because they don't, a lot of the theatres don't have understudies, for example. So you could go for a theatre role for a 6 month period or something, but then there's no understudy. So if you got, you can't, you probably miss out on, you know, TV slots or advert slots or films or series or anything like that.
And I think was Matt Lewis talking with you about that
too?
I
think,
he does a lot of theater still as well. I applaud actors who are able to balance the two. I enjoy the process, and I think now with the pandemic, it's actually kind of, it's nice to just not leave your house and get the stuff done. But I do miss being in-person auditions are really fun and you get to really connect. It's a whole different ball game, but we're so used to self-taping here in Atlanta that it wasn't too much of a stretch.
Yeah.
You do get a little bit complacent. You get used to that. Oh, just go in your taping room or go to your favorite taping service and get it done.
Yeah.
There's a big difference in the time allotment for sure.
Okay. Fair enough. Excuse me. I was going to say, especially for that as well. Now back to the musical theatre, though. What's your favourite show? What's your favourite musical?
Well, as a kid, it was always Cats.
I love Cats.
But as an adult, I'm like, wow, that's just a whole bunch of songs strung together with no real plot or anything going on in between. And yep. So it's still magical to me, but it's funny. But right now, I mean, Dear Evan Hansen captured my heart. I liked it so much. I saw it 3 times when it was here in Atlanta last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally got to see Hamilton on Disney Plus because I had never seen that live. So that was awesome. My niece is really into that, and she can sing probably any of those roles. But I keep telling her, you've got to go to New York. This is going to be something that you could excel at someday. Oh, yeah. She loves it. So we'll see. We have another star in the family.
Fantastic. I've not watched Hamilton yet. We've got it on Disney Plus here as well. So I've not seen it yet. And I really want to take the time just on a Saturday night and just watch it. Because I adore going to the theatre and seeing musicals. I've seen so many. I can't list my favourite either. I mean, I saw Phantom on Broadway. Les Miserables, Les Miserables, Lion King in the West End. There's been Carousel, West Side Story. Loads. That's just, the list's endless. But what did you think about Cats, the movie, the new one?
I didn't watch it. I was a little bit afraid and just from the trailer. And then when people started panning it, I was like, I can't watch it because it'll ruin my love for the original. So I have not seen it yet. But I feel bad that I feel like all the cast that they put together was all just such great people. And they probably had a lot of fun doing it. So I don't know. Maybe at some point I'll get my courage up to check it out. I do. I love the songs.
Yeah.
So, you know,
they've got that. I watched it once. I won't watch it again.
Did they put a plot in it? Do they add something to it? Or is it just like the stage production?
It's just like the stage, pretty much just like the stage production. There is a little bit more plot around it. And it's obviously all centers around the Jellicle Ball, doesn't it? Anyway, mm-hmm. And that's what they go for. But I just didn't like the character. You had some amazing actors in there. Jane Judy Dench, Idris Elba, one of my favourite actors ever. But even Dame Judy Dench, I thought, was not her best performance. And whether I think it might have been the writing underneath, because it was, I don't know, and making the, is it Grisabella? No, it's not Grisabella she plays, is it? I can't. Oh, Deuteronomy she plays. But old Deuteronomy.
Deuteronomy. I like that. That's a good idea.
It is, but in T.S. Eliot, old Deuteronomy is this grouchy old man, So it does work in a way. Because I mean, Dame Judi Dench is just an amazing actress, anyway.
Yeah,
but she played it well. But yeah, it's just I don't know. I think there's. I'm not going to name the names of the two people who I don't like in it. Mainly didn't like. And it's because I just don't like. I'm not keen on them in normal life anyway.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah. One of them I did actually try and get on my show because I said, you've missed a chance because his surname is very like Gordon. Yeah. I turned around to his publicist. Yeah, he came to London and his publicist, when I wrote to his publicist, they said no. And I did write back very cheekily and just said, you've missed a treat. I said, you could have had Corden and Gordon.
He could have you in his car for the...
Yeah, for the... Yeah.
That bit karaoke that he car. Does.
Yeah. I don't mind. I'll name drop him for something. He's funny, but in Cats, it didn't work. That's my view on it.
Yeah, that's what I've heard from a lot of people. So I'll have to check it out at some point.
It's probably worth checking out.
But
I mean, you also said music, very centered about music. And obviously that's what you came through as well. And, your husband also plays the drums. He's a musician too.
Yes. Yeah, he is. We've only played in one band together, though, over the years, which is kind of funny because we've known each other for 30 years, I think. And I filled in on bass with his band once when the bass player in his band had to have surgery.
Okay.
And they had a real shtick going. They were like a James Bond themed kind of deal. And so the bass player told everyone that he'd been shot and had to have surgery to remove. That's not what happened. But I filled in for that. And that, but other than that, we've only played in one band together, but we have a lot of fun just getting together and playing songs. Yeah, getting together with friends.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I don't play. I don't have time to do it all. So something had to give. And honestly, being in a band is like having another family.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as relationships, and you know, you sometimes disagree with each other, sometimes it's awesome, but also scheduling, that, you know, every aspect of that, you're having to split your time between your regular family and your music family, and then scheduling everything kind of becomes a nightmare when you're trying to book auditions and sometimes have to be out of town for that. So I put that on the back burner, but I may revisit it someday. We'll see. And I've definitely had auditions where I've been called upon to play. I've played the drums in an audition, and even though that's not my primary instrument.
Yeah.
And I have, I've had one, I think one audition where I played some bass, but
that's pretty cool.
But yeah. So they overlap to some degree. Even though it's not musical theater, but you never know when you might be called upon to have a skill in in a movie or TV show. So I definitely put it out there that I'm the girl that can actually play bass, unlike, for not naming names, someone in the movie Wayne's World, who I don't know if they even bothered to try to teach her to play, but that used to drive me nuts. I was like, they could have at least given her some basics so that it looked like I used to teach kids in the summer at Girls Rock Camp ATL, which is a great organization that has their individual groups, but they're united under the Girls Rock Camp umbrella. Started out in the West Coast, but they're all over the country and all over the world now, actually. So, you know, if you've got a young girl in your life who wants to play rock and roll, it's a great, obviously with COVID, I don't know that any of the programs have been able to happen this summer, but, you know, we had a curriculum where you, we would teach whatever instrument the girls were deciding to play. I taught bass, and at the end of the week, they'd learn the instrument, form a band, write a song together. And at the end of the week, they'd play on a real stage at one of our pretty decent sized venues here in Atlanta. And for the general public, huge show, and with a silent auction, all kinds of other stuff. But these girls, some of them never had any experience at all prior to that, and they could get on stage and knock out a song. So I just feel like we all owe it to ourselves as actors to at least try to learn. I mean, it's not, you can at least get learn enough to fake your way through it convincingly. So I'm here to offer my services as a female who can actually play bass for anyone who needs that in a role. So anyway,
that's pretty impressive. I want to show you something now. If I just change off my, my background for a minute. If I can just do something.
Oh, you've got your kit right there. That's awesome. And your dad played. You told me your dad played with Brubeck.
Yeah. I mean, that's the kit. That's the very kit that he used.
That is? Oh, my gosh. That's amazing.
When he passed away, he sort of left the kit for my son, who's now doing his grade five. He's training for his grade five drums. He's really strange because he's got my dad's techniques. My dad used to sit on the stool just at one side with his ear to the band, and obviously one ear to the drum. He's just sitting there like that, and he's a proper the proper jazz drumming there.
Yeah,
and he's picked that up perfectly. And he the last time he was three when my dad passed away.
And didn't really witness it.
No, he sat my dad's knee now and then, but he must channel it. But yeah, no, my dad played for Dave Brubeck. He's played for Dudley Moore. Fry and Laurie, Stephen Fry. They came to the Footlights Club when he was in Cambridge. When he studied at Cambridge, and they all played there. So he played the drums while they came. And Ronnie Scott's Jazz Club in London as well, he played at.
That's really cool. I feel like that happens more with jazz than with... So, I mean, there are other genres that... I know Indigo Girls, for example, hire the orchestras in different cities when they do those tours and play with them. But, and I remember there being a band when my band, the Holland Dutch, was playing out a lot. We played here in Atlanta at the Earl with a band called King Radio. Mm-hmm. I think they were from Boston or somewhere right outside, somewhere in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
And they were, I just remember being like, oh, this is so different. They came down, they were like a three piece, but they hired or commissioned local players to come and do the string parts of their song. And it was really cool. I bought their CD. I still have it. I thought they were great. But that was just so unusual for that, for rock and roll or for that indie style of music to, well, first of all, for anyone to know how to read and write music enough to be able to give someone some sheet music and say, here, can you play this? But, yeah, I love that. Like how your dad would be sort of the session guy when all these big names would come to town. That's really cool.
Yeah, I only found that out quite recently. Well, no, I didn't find it out quite recently because it was something he always used to say. I've played for Dave Brubeck.
Yeah, that's not one you keep under your hat, I think, you've done that.
I've got some drumsticks which he left, so we've got all the different types of sticks. And there's a set of sticks, and it wasn't Dave Brubeck, it was another one. But it was another famous jazz drummer who gave my dad those sticks as well at one point. So.
Oh, wow.
But, yeah, but no, it's great. It's great fun. It's great.
Yeah,
talking about
sure.
And obviously talking about your multi talents as well, because you're obviously a graphical designer as well as an actress. So
yes,
yeah, Helen Irvin, who is one of the Cobra Kai fans, she's asked, yeah, what's been your favorite job from all of those, from a graphic designer, actress, music performer? What was your favorite?
Wow, well, thank you for the question, Helen. I don't know that I can pick. I mean, acting is really fun. It's fun to be other people and find that reality in that and explore it. Graphic design is my day job, which I'm very grateful for right now, since you know, there isn't a whole lot of acting stuff happening at the moment. And I have so many friends that work in industries that were also hit hard, whether they're servers or you know, in other positions that were shut down. So then they are sort of hit twice. They can't act and they can't do their regular job. So, but being creative people, I've known several, that have really, like my friend, Michael has done Friday night bartending classes.
Okay.
And you can donate money and tune in and learn how to make a different cocktail. And, you know, so people have gotten creative about ways to make money, but so I'm very grateful to still have some graphic design work coming in, and I'm grateful that I chose a creative career. Obviously, that's the thread there, right? Between among the music and the design and acting, is there's a creative drive in me to just be creating something, whether I'm telling a story or I'm putting something visual together. It all taps into that. And so I think that's why they've overlapped for me so much over the years. I started out in graphic design for my career after college.
Mm-hmm.
When I moved to Atlanta for a design job here, that was when I started a band called the Moto Litas, with three other gals. And we were picked up by Damon Records, which is Amy Ray's label of Indigo Girls.
Yeah.
And then, of course, that in turn led to, I did some design work because all the bands on the label had to kind of pitch in. We would do things for the label because we didn't have any fees or anything. Right. They would shop us around and pay all this money to put our albums out and give us the chance to get traction, and didn't ask for us to return that money. Like a lot of labels would give you a guarantee, but you have to pay back if you're not successful. So, so we would volunteer in the office and do stuff. And I just said, well, my talent is design. I can design some things for you. So that led to designing several Indigo Girls albums and some of Amy Ray's solo stuff and a DVD that they did. I got to art direct. And so that was the first overlap.
Mm-hmm.
But then I've also more recently done some work for Drama Inc. where I've been training, where Dustin works.
Yeah.
And I credit them with really getting me back into this, because I had dabbled some in the early 2000s, and but started training and really taking classes seriously at Drama Inc. in like 2017, I think I started back there.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done some design work for them as well. And so it's nice to be able to, first of all, help your friends. You know, a lot of times people, even recently, I helped Dustin with a flyer. And I have a crazy story if we can take a turn. So I was in Charlotte, North Carolina for a callback. I guess it's been about a year now. And I went to sign in and wrote my name down and turned the clipboard back around. The lady said, "Oh, I'm sorry. Is that Erin Danger or Erin Dangler?" And I was like, "Oh, I get that all the time. It's Danger." And she's like, "No, no, they're both, there's both of you. Which one are you?" And I was like, "You've got to be kidding me. There's an Erin Dangler." So I told the lady, I said, "Oh, this one is me. And when she comes in, will you please wave to me? I want to know what she looks like." So a few minutes go by and this striking tall blonde woman walks in and signs in, and the lady's like, you know, that's her. And so I walked over and introduced myself, and we've become friends, and we, you know, see each other, well, with the pandemic, not as much. Yeah. I'm hoping to see her later this week for a socially distanced cocktail or something. We'll see. But she, I had a point to this story, Drama Inc. Oh, she also, she lives in North Carolina and she teaches classes and has, she's a consultant for, she does a lot of different things, all pertaining to acting and public speaking and performance and stuff. Yeah. And so I did a flyer for her. So it's just, it's nice to be able to kind of have a skill that I can help people with that, you know, we all have little things we have to design for ourselves, whether it's for Instagram or when a show comes out that you're on, you want to do a little promo to send out. Yeah. So it's a good skill to have.
Oh, it is. Definitely.
Yeah.
Great story as well.
That was very long-winded.
It's like quite coincidental, the Danger and the Dangler thing.
Yeah, isn't it funny? And now she trains at Drama Inc. as well. And so I sometimes get emails that were intended for her because everyone can. but I can't think of anyone I would rather be confused for. She's fantastic.
Excellent. I mean, with Drama Inc. as well, because Catherine Dye has been on my show too.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
she's fantastic.
Oh, she's a great lady. You studied the Meisner technique, so I'm going to put Dustin under the cosh here because isn't he a good teacher?
Yeah, she's fantastic. You know, Meisner, a lot of people, all they might know if they've heard of it is like the repetition thing, and people aren't really sure where it goes from there. And even when I took the class, I had taken a little sort of intro to Meisner somewhere else. And I was thinking, I don't get it. It doesn't make sense. And I realized that it was the teaching that made the difference. So I knew Dustin before and said, "Well, I'm going to jump into your class." And it's a 6-month commitment. It's an intensive, but that's still just a fraction of a quote unquote, like full on Meisner intensive would be like 2 years, I think, in New York, the original. But 6 months it's a good in-depth study of it. And what I figured out right away in the first couple classes was that this other teacher in the intro I had done just talked the whole time about stuff. And we might have a few minutes to try it on. But Dustin is a man of few words when he gets into class. And it's great because he'll give you just what you need to understand what's going on, but not infiltrate your moment. And it's really, he's wonderful. He lets you explore. I feel like Meisner is a very personal journey that's probably a little different for each actor. You're learning the same technique, but you have to really embody that from your own heart and standpoint, and he really lets you do that. So yeah, he's incredible.
Fantastic. Really, for sure.
And I'm not just saying that because he's my friend. And because he gave me a shout out in his No, he's great. And he mentioned in the interview about having that day on set together, which was totally magical. It really was great. I was a little bit extra nervous doing that in front of him, but no, it was all good. How fun to be able to be on set doing something you love, especially on the set of Cobra Kai, where everyone is supportive and it's just a happy, friendly, loving set.
Yeah.
And then to have one of my favorite people happen to be booked on the same day and get to hang out and in the hallway in between setups and catch up. It was really fun. I'll treasure that moment forever.
Brilliant. Dustin's a great guy. He really is. He's a fantastic guy.
Yeah, one of my favorite people for sure.
He's really nice. So what drew you to Cobra Kai then? What drew you to Cobra Kai? as a show? I mean,
it was brand new and nobody really knew much about the intent that these three mystery guys had when it was, the breakdown was released. So this was 2017, I think, fall-ish. I didn't have an agent yet. I had only just been training at Drama Inc. for like maybe 6 months at that point.
Right.
And, you know, as a good acting studio, they encourage you to create an actor's access profile, which is free. You put your picture up there and your resume, which I had very little on it at that point other than theater from millions of years ago. And I had done one short film over the summer. And then the couple things I had from the early 2000s when I had dabbled back in it. Back in 2005, my good friend Emily Suarez wrote and directed a short and asked me to be in it. So that's called Herringbone. And I did that and loved it. And so I had a few things to my credit, but not much. And so I was just putting my own stuff there on Actors Access and responding to any of the breakdowns that fit my, you know, my age range and look and all that, kind of trying to be my own agent, as we all do until you get one.
Yeah.
And I got this breakdown for Cobra Kai. I'm not sure if it even was called that in the breakdown. You know, sometimes they're very vague. They don't want a whole lot of information.
Yeah, they're trying to keep it a secret. Yeah.
They'll give you dummy sides, like the part of the script that you read that isn't even in it.
Yeah.
In this case, my sides were the scene. So that part was the real deal. But I read the sides and thought I had an instant connection with the character. I was like, this is very me. Kind of awkward and a little bit particular and some of the things. Not everything, hopefully. But I had this instant thought of like who she was, and I really wanted to audition. But I was over in Knoxville, Tennessee on location shooting the Murder Comes to Town episode that I was in. And so I thought, how am I going to do this? Because I had learned already from Jason McDonald and Catherine Dyer that you don't turn in a crappy looking audition tape. And you know, there are standards. I have my gray wall behind me now and decent lighting. But at the hotel, everything was a pattern. There was no plain wall anywhere. There wasn't any good lighting. And at that point, I didn't have a travel kit that I took with me. I have a ring light now and a little stand and a pop-up background and all kinds of stuff I travel with. So I ended up, I spent time in between scenes memorizing 7 pages of this audition. And then that night at the hotel, one of my castmates was staying at the same hotel and he agreed to tape me. And we found this one wall that was maybe 4 feet wide and the door on one side went into the kitchen and the edge of the wall, like when he tried to be really steady, but if he just went to the side a little bit, you could see the whole dining room. It was just this terrible. And there was one light that came down where as long as I stayed standing pretty straight, it was okay. But if I gestured at all, it was like shadow all over. It was so terrible quality wise, but I felt like the performance was there. And Jason and I have laughed about this since. Like I emailed him and said, I'm afraid to make a bad impression because this looks like I do not know what I'm doing, but I really want to submit it. And it was late at night. And so I didn't hear back from him until the next day. And I was just like, okay, I have to hit send. And there's a place where you can put in the notes if there are special circumstances. Yeah. And so I explained I was out of town. I would be back in Atlanta on Saturday. Would be happy to retape or whatever, but here you go. And sent it off into the world. And then the next morning I got Jason's response is like, do not send that to, I mean, I didn't send him the tape. He didn't see it, but just from my description, he was thinking this is probably a terrible idea. But thankfully the casting director on season one, Bajo is what we call him, Olubaju Sanubi. He saw past it and was willing to take a chance on this girl who looked like she didn't know what she was doing and put it through to producers. And they had been, this was, I think, at least the second round for that character. Mm-hmm. And I know people who auditioned for it the first time around through agencies, like legit established actors who are fantastic. And I've talked to them about it since, you know, they've said, hey, you know, I auditioned for that. And I'm thinking, how did you not book it? There was just something they were looking for, you know, something quirky that they hadn't found. And I was really fortunate to have been the quirk that they was, that had been missing. So it really, I have another friend, Victor Rivera, who does a little bit of mentoring for folks that are moving to Atlanta that are trying to find their footing here. And he said he uses me as an example all the time when he's telling them, you know, just go for stuff because you never know. And sometimes it is just that one special thing about you that wins it. Because so many times we have no idea why we book or why we don't. And you just have to be giving it your best and your most real work. And sometimes you get them, sometimes you don't. But I'm overjoyed that this was one that I actually booked. It's such a great show. I'm a fan as well. And, you know, I was not in season two, but I watched every minute of it. It's such a well thought out, well written, genuine show. I think the big three, I think their intentions really shine through in the writing, and they've cast it so well. It's a joy to watch. I hope everybody will check it out on Netflix who hasn't already. It deserves that bigger audience.
Oh, definitely. It's great that it's moved coming a couple of weeks now. It's not that long now before it moves to Netflix. I binge watched season one and two because it'd been on my list. I've got a huge list of stuff to watch, and it's just, you know, with the time, isn't it? Just trying to get through. So I put Cobra Kai on my list, and we just binge watched seasons one and two. Because you just can't stop because it, like you just said, it's just such a well-made show, well-rounded acting, writing, everyone else involved. Obviously the stunts are brilliant. Stunt choreography, just absolutely brilliant. The music and the soundtrack, everything just fits in perfect. I'm an 80s.
Really
does. 80s great.
They've hit it out of the park with the group of people they've put together from top to bottom, really. I mean, it's amazing. That made me think of the story. I hosted the Cobra Kai Companion Sunday night All Valley Trivia Championship 2 weeks ago. And so anyone who's tuned into that, I've already told the story, but I have to say, because I find it amusing that I told my parents, hey, Cobra Kai seasons one and two are going to be out on Netflix. And for, you know, as my parent, they're really only interested in season one, right?
Yeah.
But I said, you know, you guys haven't seen it since we watched it. We had a little watch party with some friends here. They saw it then. But they didn't have YouTube and didn't really understand even how to subscribe. They're older.
Yeah.
And so I said, aren't you excited? Now you can watch season one again. You can see the episodes I'm in again from the comfort of your sofa. And my mom said, actually, we canceled Netflix because we've seen it all. I was like... I don't think that's possible. They meant that they had seen all the things that appealed to them, like all the British shows that weren't on BritBox or Acorn, and whatever else, any movies that had been on Netflix, they had already seen all that. And I'm not even sure they were streaming. I think they were still doing the thing with the CD with the DVD, that you sent forth. So, like, we're going to get you signed up again. Because this is going to be a whole new animal now that you can stream things. And so I just thought that was funny. So hopefully we're going to really hit a wider audience if we can get all these people to sign up for Netflix.
That'd be great.
They need help in that department.
I did see a great thing actually. It's halfway through the pandemic. It's like 3 months into the pandemic. Help me, because I've completed Netflix.
You're right. That is funny. I feel like I tried really hard to, I had this mindset of like, okay, I'm not going to let this get me down. I'm just going to watch all the things that I've wanted to see. And somehow I've not managed to do that. I still have stuff that I'm trying to catch up on. And then I had to subscribe to HBO because I had to watch Patton Oswalt's the documentary about his late wife, Michelle McNamara's work with the Golden State Killer. I'll Be Gone in the Dark. It's fantastic. I believe it's a mini series. So I think the last episode just aired Sunday night and I wasn't able to watch it then. So that's on my list for this week. I've got to see that. And my daughter is watching for the first time, binging all of Grey's Anatomy because she wants to be a doctor. So I've been watching that with her because I never really saw that the first time around. We've been watching Breaking Bad again and I watched all of Better Call Saul. I don't know. I mean, I feel like I've been watching constantly and I still haven't exhausted my list. So there's a lot.
It is crazy. I've got to watch Grey's Anatomy again because they had it on our cable TV, not Netflix, it was on normal, but they messed it around. We'd watched so many of them. We got hooked into it. But then all of a sudden it started season two and then they mixed it with half of season one. And it just got really mixed up. It's like, what are you playing at? So lost the track and we just gave up on it because it was just got lost. So I've got to have to watch that again. I mean, at the moment, we're rewatching Sherlock because my wife never watched it the first time around with Benedict Cumberbatch. She, you know, completely addicted this time around. It's quite funny. She's like, put the next one on. I'm like, what?
I know. It's hard. I would say that more nights than not, I fall asleep while we're trying to watch because my daughter's like, you know, I can watch one more. It's 12 o'clock at night or 12:30. And I'm like, okay, yeah. Cause I want to see it. And then I'm asleep. So I have to ask her what I missed. But, and you know, the other thing I have on my list too, are all the shows that my friends are in that it's so great to have access to their performances. So like Jason McDonald was just in the Sweet Magnolias and got to see that. And recently finally got to see Catherine Dyer in Psycho in Law because I had downloaded the Lifetime app, but once I got in there, it wasn't there. And there was some other tier that you had to be in. I could never figure it out. So I finally got to see that. She was fabulous. So it's really fun to, you know, I think my kids think I'm weird probably, but to be like, oh my gosh, look, that's so-and-so. And I'm a fan as well as a, you know, as well as a friend.
No, it's great. I, to be fair, after people I interviewed, I was like that, especially with Dustin. You probably heard it when you saw the Dustin.
Yeah.
I didn't realize he was in Cobra Kai and we were sitting watching Cobra Kai and I was looking at the headmaster came out. I was like, that's Dustin. I said, that's Dustin. Yeah.
That's so fun. I know. And I saw him in Ozark and I mean, I knew he was going to be in it, but so exciting to see. And then his one performance, I think it was when we were still having, we were in the middle of Meisner class and I went to him the next class and was like, has your mom seen that? And like, how do you explain that to your mom? His mom seems super cool though. So I imagine that she's all on board with his craft. But I'm like, I might, you know, not tell my mom to watch that one. I don't know. It's great. But it was really neat to see him stretch in that role. I mean, just amazing. Such a great show. That's one of my favorites.
It's good. My wife's annoyed with it now though, because I just sit there and go, they've been on my show. I'm friends with them on Facebook. Right. They've been on my show.
Yeah, my family's like that too. Like, stop pointing everyone out. It's distracting.
My son's into SWAT and I'm like, Kenny, Kenny Johnson, I'm like, he's been on my show twice now.
In fact, the kids are, of course, like, what do you think that makes you cool? Because it doesn't.
although, to be fair, the last time Kenny Johnson came on, I got my son in and he spoke to him specially before, which was great.
That's cool. Actually, the kids from Cobra Kai did that for me, for my kids, too. Oh, it's so nice when folks do that. Yeah, they all got together and were like, hi, and said their names. And it was cute. Because at the time, when I first got booked and I realized who was going to be in it, you know, now we all know who they are, but back then my kids knew Kirby Buckets. They had seen that, so they knew Jacob, and they had seen Gianni in the show with the twin blondes. I can't think of the name of it off the top of my head. It's a Disney show. He was on that, and they had seen Oh, I don't know. Well, we don't have to go through all of it. They knew who a lot of these kids were.
Yeah.
And it was just really special to them when I got to work with them that they didn't quite understand what I was doing. But then I come home with this video of them all saying hi, and they were like, oh my gosh. It's so cool. it's neat when folks are nice.
Yeah, that's always definitely a perk. That's it. When you work with that cast of Cobra Kai as well, it's, you know, because they are, everyone I spoke to is such a lovely, well gelled cast, and everyone's, like you said before, they're very supportive of each other and the cast as well.
Yeah, and so friendly, and of course my scenes were with Ralph as Daniel. And I'm trying to remember, I think it did say Daniel in the script. I can't remember. I feel like it didn't fully know for sure if it was going to be Ralph Macchio that I didn't have a full sense of it. Mm-hmm. So when I got onto set and we walked into the room, I was a little nervous because I realized that this is happening. And I had seen Cobra Kai. I mean, I had seen Karate Kid as a younger person. And so of course I understood the magnitude of that moment. But he was such a consummate professional, you know, he just, so kind and really cool to watch because he's an executive producer on the show as well. And so he had a lot of input in the moments before we would roll that a regular actor wouldn't, you know, but just conversations he would have with the camera department people and talking about which lens are you using? What's the framing? And it was just such a great learning experience watching him work and so professional and obviously so well respected. And it was really cool. Very cool. Especially for my, I almost wish I could go back and relive that moment now knowing more of what I know, there were probably things I missed in watching him do that I would glean more from now, but that was a really special day for sure.
Oh, fantastic. That's great. I mean, those two are great. I mean, I love those scenes with Ralph and Billy together as well. Oh, they're some of the best ones ever. And that's what it's so rad. I was actually reminded one of the funniest things was when Billy as Johnny, he got the internet for the first time. And it's like the thing. The screen comes up with the thing and goes, yeah, dinosaurs were built in the pyramids. I knew it.
I like the hash brown thing too when he's into the hashtag. I was laughing the other day just thinking about the time that has passed and also the fact that with the pandemic I haven't had a haircut. Like I'm looking at the image of me behind you, I'm like here's Kevin Platt, and now I look more like I'm trying to compete with homeless Lynn.
Sure she'll have something to say about that.
You can't compete with homeless Lynn.
No,
you can't. Especially if you have a burrito, right?
Oh, yeah. I ain't going to hurt
you. But such a great group of people and a really cool storyline. I think they've picked up where the movies, but I mean, I've admitted before I have not seen the later installments to the movie series, but I've been told that's okay.
That's not a problem. It's fine not to have seen those.
The original, one and two, but they've just done such a great job picking up where it left off and creating what feels like a very real and believable life that those two would be living now.
Yeah.
And of course, Billy is a super, super nice guy. That first day that I was on set, he was there. He was just coming in at lunch. Mm-hmm. Or it might have been the second day, but it was early on. And he and his kids and his wife had gone to the Children's Germs On Museum, but the Hands-On Museum. they're picking up all their questionable things there, but they have hand washing stations. Yeah. But they had gone and done all the Atlanta tourist stuff that morning and then come, and I got to sit with them at lunch, and his son was adorable, just telling me all about all the things that they saw and all the things that he touched, and it was so cute. They were just the nicest people, and that was, because I didn't get to work with him. I didn't have any scenes with him. So that was a nice moment to be able to sit and have a meal and get to know them a little bit.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah.
But it just sounds like it is. Everyone's so nice on that set. And I am Team Johnny. I've turned off Danny.
It's hard to choose.
It is. I mean, to be fair, by the end of season two, Daniel sort of turned around again. It's just the way their lives are 108. Yeah. And yeah, it's just brilliant. It's so well written.
It is. And I think that's so key in any storytelling, is making sure that even your bad guy has something about him that makes you you can root for him. Yeah. Because then you can turn the tables like that and people are still willing to hang on and see where it goes. And
exactly. Because especially when they introduce someone like Kreese again, who is really the bad guy, because then you've already built up that relationship and that likability of Johnny already. So it's like, you're now torn because it's Danny, Johnny, and Kreese.
It's perfect. But then you're wondering with Kreese, I felt like the whole way through season two, you're like, this, which way is it going to go? He can't really be. No, he's.
Martin plays so well. Like, he does that so well. And you're just like, you are. You're just thinking, he can't really be that bad. No.
He goes
to the homeless shelter where he's the veteran set, where he's, there. And it's like, you feel really sorry for him, and obviously, that's how and it's like, because he can't be that bad. He's obviously just had a really, really bad time and he just wants to get back. Nope, you're evil.
But that's just so great about it, because it takes you on that ride and it makes it that much more enjoyable to hang in there for it. So I'm really excited for season three because, as we all know, cliffhanger from season two. We got to see what happens with that. Of course, spoiler, season three is all about Counselor Blatt's and Mr. Palmer's torrid love affair.
Yep.
All other storylines are unimportant. We'll get back to those later, right? Dustin and I have talked about that several times, though. Have our own little fanfic.
You did mention that to me.
Sidebar going on.
He mentioned that to me. He said,
I'd be willing to take a kick to the face. I think everybody would enjoy seeing Counselor Blatt go down. I mean, that'd be fun. I'll take it.
It'd be fun. Dustin told me about that little the little joke.
And there's some fan fiction that I've seen online where people, I didn't even know this. I mean, I knew it was a thing, fan fiction in general, but I really didn't realize the depths to which people will take a thread of a story and go in a whole other direction. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting. So there's a lot of cool stuff out there. I wonder sometimes how much the big three pay attention to any of that, or if there are any correct assumptions that people have made. We'll see. I wish I had a date. We're all watching all the big three's social media accounts with bated breath waiting to hear, but
It must be hard for those guys to be around pushing it, not only just moving to Netflix but also moving it to to obviously to get the season three out anyway, because with the pandemic and everything. So I can just imagine how much hassle.
And anticipation. And I read something the other day about there are all these groups of people that on Facebook or wherever else that congregate and talk about all things fandom. Mm-hmm. And I heard that people are getting really anxious.
Oh, yeah.
Almost to the point of being upset about the delay. And
And it's like, but it's like, we're in a global pandemic at the moment, and you're moving major platforms.
From YouTube. And it'll be worth it.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Well, also, I think, and I don't remember where I heard this, so I don't know if this is actually the case, but it made sense to me when I heard it, that because Netflix is released in more than 30 countries and they like to release it on the same day everywhere. Mm-hmm. It sounds like that's a lot of work to do the overdubbing for all the other languages.
Exactly. That's the
they got a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
That may be one of the main reasons that it's being held up because they have to get that done. Exactly. I can't wait to hear someone, please, if you live in another country that is not an English speaking country, please send me a clip of the overdub of Counselor Blatt from season one once that gets going, because I want to hear what it sounds like. I don't know why, I just think that's fascinating to have someone else speak for you in another language. But
I'll try and get the German version because I speak German. Ooh. So I might try and log into the German version.
Oh, that would be so cool. Well, my Instagram is the Danger Zone. So if anyone has that, you can contact me on there. I would love it. Sorry, shameless plug.
Oh, yeah. That was very, very 80s-like as well. Didn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was wishing I could get Kenny Loggins to re-record the hit for me and sing Highway to the Danger Zone. But so far, that has not happened. We'll see. Maybe
good.
He watches this and he'll send me a clip.
Excellent. So question from Emma as well. I'll leave this as for the last one. She's excited, obviously, for season three, but can you tell about any upcoming projects that you might have?
Yes. Well, hi, Emma. Dorothy, I'm assuming. Emma.
Yeah, it's Dorothy on Twitter. But
Dorothy is my Irish pen pal. I love it. She's very supportive and always has a kind word. And so... thank you for that. And thank you for the question. So I know, and Dustin touched on this a little bit too. I first want to say, I feel like it's hard to be upset at all about any of this delay stuff I'm about to talk about, because so many people are going through so much worse situations than, you know, waiting for their footage to drop, obviously. I'm grateful that my family's healthy as of now, and hopefully we'll be able to stay that way. And my heart goes out to those who have not been so fortunate or who've lost loved ones or jobs. But I hope that the entertainment industry is serving folks in some way to bring some escape and happiness in hard moments. So it's hard because, you know, we're all anxious for new content because we are stuck in this sort of rut of whatever's been available. So I have two things that I have no idea because of the pandemic when they will be out. One of them is a movie called Sun, and it says on IMDb now, and I think this is different from even last week, it's in post-production. Okay. So I took that as a good sign that it didn't just stall out somewhere along the line. They wrapped that the week before we shut down here in the Southeast.
Right.
So they got it, at least the principal photography, done just under the line. But then I wasn't sure what would happen with it, with editing and everything else. So hopefully all that's on track. But that is a horror suspense thriller that stars Andy Matichak from the Halloween series and Emil Hirsch. I feel like most people know him from Into the Wild.
Right.
But that was an older movie. He was most recently, I think, in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
And he makes music. He's got some cool tunes on Spotify that he writes and produces with a producer, a Frenchman that's a producer that he knows, and they come up with some really neat stuff. And then a young star, Luke David Blum, who you may have seen if you saw the new Pete Davidson movie, King of Staten Island.
Mm-hmm.
He's the little boy in that. Okay. So he'll be in it. So I'm really looking forward to that. I had a fantastic 2 weeks in Cleveland, Mississippi, working on that in February. And just another fantastic cast and great crew. And just, you know, sometimes you get on a set and it's kind of Dullsville, and this was just fun. Everybody was friendly and engaged, and they were there for a long time. Everyone was on location. The director and the producers were actually from Ireland. So they had come a really long way. And, but yeah, so that was a lot of fun to make. And I'm looking forward to that coming out. I'm hoping, because it's horror, that they'll try to shoot for maybe like a Halloween-ish fall release. But again, I'm not sure. And then the other thing was a pilot that I did for a series called We've Got Something in Common. And that's going to be a really interesting one. There are even two guys in it from Cobra Kai. AJ Hicks and Christopher Ryan Lewis are in that. And so we don't really know when that's going to, because that, as a pilot, it has to get picked up from somewhere first. And but that was super fun to work on. And Candy Rain spearheaded that and was fantastic to work with. And so, yeah, so we're just kind of sitting around waiting to see when these things will appear. But but yeah, like I said, it's I'm just grateful to be healthy and hanging in there right now. So I can wait for season 3 of Cobra Kai to, you know, I want to see how the story progresses, but we all just have to be patient, I suppose. Lesson.
Definitely. I was gonna say, I actually know Emil from Trollhunters. He's the voice of Jim Lake Jr. as well. From Trollhunters, the show my son watches that. So
he's been around forever. I mean, he
I just brought him up on IMDb and I was like, whoa.
Yeah. When I've seen him, one of the original ones I watched, it's the surfing one. Lords of Dogtown, is it? If you have your IMDb up.
Yeah, I'm just looking through it now. Hang on.
Is that the right name? I'm sorry if it's not. Right.
Lords of Dogtown,
Did I get that right? Oh my gosh, I can't believe I pulled that out. I have this weird disconnect in my brain for, like, I'll watch films, and unless it's Raising Arizona, I cannot quote anything. The plot line will be vaguely in there. I guess it'll serve me well in my senior years, because I'll be able to rewatch things over and over again. It'll never get old. But some people are just walking encyclopedias of actors and directors and, you know, the quoting lines and plot points. And I don't have that skill. Is that you? I'll call you when I need. I'm like, what was that? You know, person thing, plot point, quote.
Not all of them. I won't say all of them, but I remember when I used to be in the Territorial Army and with friends, and we used to, a lot of the time, we used to go over the hills, and to keep us company, we'd recite all of Monty Python and Blackadder sketches.
Oh, wow.
But I do have a knack of being able to pick up a film if my son's watching it. I'll come in on the film and it'd be the opening credit, or it'll be one line in it, and I'll go, that's that film. And I'll just sit there and I'll look at the film and I'll go, right, that's that actor, that's that actor. Oh, this was done by, and she's like, how do you know that?
That's really an amazing skill. I love Monty Python. I love the Young Ones. I watched that again recently just because I had such nostalgia for it. And it didn't hold up the way I thought it would. I didn't laugh as hard at the jokes.
Yeah, it's very strange, different.
I don't know why, because I loved it back in the day.
Yeah,
but
it's you can't beat Monty Python or Blackadder. It's like, I love the final Blackadder. Blackadder Goes Forth, that episode where they go over the top. I cry every time. It's the most emotional scene that because also it's comedy all the way through. And then that final when they go over the top, it's like he goes, Blackadder, I'm scared. it's like, all right.
It's getting real now.
It is, exactly. And when he goes, goes, where the last of the tiddlywinkers,
I used to love, I still love Doctor Who. Oh my gosh, David
Tennant. That's great.
Can do no wrong in my mind. But that would be a person I would love to work with someday. I just think he's fantastic.
He's a great actor.
But then also back in the day, what's the other show? Red Dwarf. I used to love that. Did you ever watch that?
I love that as well. My son's just, I got him into it. He's binge watched every season.
Really? See, I need to go look for some of those things and show the kids. Some
oh,
of
yeah, stuff. They're all on Netflix. They're great. I've met the cast as well because they've come to the comic cons over here. So,
oh, yeah.
Rimmer, Lister, the cat.
Yeah. See, okay. So I know you and I had talked about this, but I just signed with Scene Stealers because mm-hmm. I know you had talked with, well, we're all, they're trying to get everyone on board so we can have this big Cobra Kai group that goes to cons when we can have cons again
mm-hmm.
in person. That was something I thought, ooh, if we get to go to the UK, I'm totally going to dork out and go for all these people that I've always wanted to meet. That, I mean, I met David Tennant last year and he came to Dragon Con. I volunteer there. So I got to meet him and that, you know, that was amazing. Just briefly, I had to do the photo thing. He wasn't just wandering around. So, I think that's something really different. Not all those folks come over here for the cons, at least not at Dragon Con that I've seen. Yeah. So
the same, likewise.
Them in the UK.
I bumped up 2 years ago, went to Birmingham and met Edmondson. You know, Adrian Edmondson. Blackadder and Bottom and stuff like, and young ones even. Vivian. Very shy, very shy. Wouldn't look anyone in the
eye.
Met Mads Mikkelsen there and Carl Urban.
That's always hard. I like when you meet somebody and everyone we met at Dragon Con was just lovely. You know, they're friendly, and that's got to be a hard day. I would think especially for the big stars with the long lines.
Yeah, they've been nonstop. I mean, you know, the Birmingham one, the same, like Mads Mikkelsen's line never stopped. It was just ongoing. And Michael Biehn, I interviewed him at his hotel. Then the following week, he was at a convention. I saw him and his wife, and I went to speak to his wife to say hello. And she was like, oh, and she stopped his entire, he had about 100 people in the queue. And she's like, Michael, wait, this is the lovely interview. Chris remembers me last week. Chris, he goes, my son's here as well. We're going for a coffee or a beer afterwards. And I was like, and all the queues just looking at me with evil looks going, who are you? And I was like,
I'm somebody.
I was like, Corporal Hicks wants to go for a beer.
don't we all just want to be appreciated in that way? You know, that's like basic human nature. Just want that kindness. That's really awesome.
It was great.
Everyone should be that way. I promise I will try. When I get the opportunity someday to go to these cons, I will try to be as friendly as possible because I think that's important. But right now, all that stuff's virtual, so I guess
we'll
have to wait and see.
We will. Cool. I can bring that to last question there, Erin, because I know we've talked away for so long now. This is that off the wall question, which I know you've seen because you've seen. It's if you could have a Muppet created after you.
I did see that you did this, and I forgot to think about it before I said, oh, I got to think about that one.
This is a personality question.
All right. Well, let's see. My mom and I have an Ernie and Bert thing. My name's Erin, but my mom always called me Ernie.
Right.
And so I called her Bert. So there's a special thing there. Mm-hmm. But I think... if we're trying to actually go with like personality traits, that something that would actually, a Muppet that would actually embody me, probably a combination of Statler and Waldorf. Yeah. I think those resonate the most with me.
The only thing I do for it, burp. I can't do it properly. It mixes into my Kermit, which is like, pee.
That's good.
Get on set, Pete.
I had a dog as a kid that we named after a Muppet. It was an obscure one. His name was Muppy. And I have a record, the gatefold with all the Muppets inside. And then at the bottom, it had a legend of who's who. Mm-hmm. And you couldn't even see him, but he had his name at the bottom. So we're like, there we go. Muppy the Muppet.
Fantastic.
But I loved all of that. There's a museum here in Atlanta. We have the Center for Puppetry Arts here, and they have their own group of very accomplished puppeteers, but then they get touring shows. And again, one of our stages that's probably taking a hit right now, but They have a fantastic museum there. If you ever get to Atlanta, they have, I guess part of it's rotating. They have a lot of different Muppets, but they have one of the Skeksis from Dark Crystal. Mm-hmm. Like, they're much bigger than I thought. Like, obviously, yeah, you know, somebody has to operate it and you get that, mm-hmm, but it's just so cool to see it in person. Fantastic. So they have a lot of really, and some historic puppets from Asia and Africa and different continents from, yeah, ages old. Like, you wouldn't want to touch them. They seem like they would fall apart, but, wow, they've been preserved. And yeah, I'm not speaking very eloquently on the history there, but they have, it's a really great museum. If someone comes to Atlanta, it's a little off the beaten path of touristy things to, yeah, do, but if you're a film buff and enjoy any of that kind of animated puppetry stuff, it's definitely worth checking out.
Fantastic. Well, I know the Skeksis, the question came because Mike Quinn, who's been on my show before, he was in Star Wars. He's also a puppeteer with Jim Henson for 30 years, and he was a puppeteer for a Skeksis on, wow, on the new Dark Crystal. And the original, he might have been.
Yeah.
Excellent. Erin, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Is there anything you'd like to say quickly to people who are watching or listening?
Oh, gosh, just thank you, everybody, for just being such big fans of Cobra Kai. I wouldn't be here if it weren't for that show. And thank you, Chris, for having me on. And I hope to connect with everybody either on social media or hopefully at a con someday.